I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. ABC, Starbucks, and the National Football League dominated the media spotlight this week as they confronted issues of racism and freedom of expression in each of their respective corporate empires. It took very little time for ABC to fire Roseanne Barr after her latest racist rant, and as that was happening on Tuesday, Starbucks employees spent the afternoon being trained about the nuances of racial bias. NFL owners, on the other hand, have said that players who protest police misconduct are disrespecting the flag rather than engaging in constitutionally protected free speech. Today on Midday, race and corporate culture. I'm joined by Michael Fletcher of The Undefeated, Milton Kent of Sports at Large, and Dr. Kimberly Moffitt of UMBC. Plus, a review from J. Wynn Russick. First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you're with us. Last Wednesday, the NFL announced that they would ban players from kneeling on the field during the national anthem and that the teams would face fines if any players chose to do so. On Tuesday, ABC canceled the reboot of the popular 90s sitcom Roseanne following racist tweets by the program's star, Roseanne Barr. And as ABC brought down the axe on Barr, 175,000 Starbucks employees were engaged in racial bias training as the company closed 8,000 locations following an incident in Philadelphia in which two African-American men were arrested for, well, being at Starbucks. Of the 32 teams in the NFL, 30 of the owners are white. There are only 3 African-Americans at the helm of Fortune 500 companies like Starbucks, and last year, 90% of showrunners for newly scripted shows on television were white, and most of them were men. James Baldwin once said, "Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced." So today on Midday, a conversation about race and corporate culture. How do we as Americans tackle institutional racism and racial bias in the bedrock of our national economic identity, the American corporation? Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is an associate professor of American Studies and affiliate assistant professor of Africana Studies and Language, Literacy, and Culture at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning.
And Michael Fletcher is a senior writer at The Undefeated. That's ESPN's online platform that explores the intersection of race, culture, and sports. He's a former national reporter for The Washington Post. Mr. Fletcher, always a pleasure, sir.
Always good to be here.
And on the phone joining us, Milton Kent, the host of Sports at Large here on WIPR. He's also a lecturer in the School of Global Journalism and Communication at Morgan State University. Milton, welcome back.
But it's a pleasure to be here with you, Tom.
Listeners, you are welcome to join our conversation. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. To find us on Twitter, you can send us a tweet at @MiddayWIPR. And you can also catch us on the WIPR Facebook page, which, thanks to our digital producer, Jamila Krimple, we are streaming live. So, Mike Fletcher, let me start with you. Valerie Jarrett, who was the subject of Roseanne Barr's racist tweet, called this a teaching moment. Did a special with MSNBC with Joy Reid and Chris Hayes on Tuesday night. I wonder, does this teaching moment strike you as any different than the many, many other teaching moments that we've had in recent memory?
Not at all. When I first heard that, I think it spoke more to Valerie's kind of her style and her just general classiness in a sense. Like, she's not the type to sort of be hot in the way we do hot takes in this culture of ours now. I met her a little bit when I covered the Obama White House. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, you can't think of someone more opposite than Roseanne Barr in terms of just how reserved, how thoughtful, how perhaps understated Valerie could be. And Roseanne, as we know, is over the top. It was just astounding to me that she would choose, out of all the targets you could choose at her, she would choose Valerie Jarrett. And her response was kind of very Valerie Jarrett-like. This is a teachable moment. And I'm thinking, well, what's, you know, I didn't quite see any new lesson here.
Yeah, and Kimberly Moffitt, I mean, what does this moment teach us about Disney, about ABC, about corporate America in terms of the reaction to Roseanne Barr, the reaction to the incident in Starbucks in Philadelphia.
That the almighty dollar rules. And as long as we can tie or have direct connections between what a business is doing and the money that it makes from what it does, whatever the product or service offered, and how public opinion influences or matters to them, that will in many ways dictate what decisions they decide to make.
And Milton Kent, is that a good idea? Is that a good thing? In other words, if there is there now leverage? You know, corporate America, if they are hip to the fact that these kinds of associations with people who harbor these kinds of racist feelings, if that's going to be bad for business, do you think that, you know, ultimately that may be an extra bunch of leverage that might move the needle a little bit?
It may. I think ultimately it may end up being the only leverage, because I'm not sure that the human heart. I suppose the older I get, the less confident, or at least the less optimistic I am about the willingness of folks to change unless they're confronted with a reason to change. And it appears that in the American culture, the only thing that really dictates change is money. And ABC was confronted. I mean, let's be honest. They knew beforehand. It wasn't as if what Roseanne Barr had said or tweeted Tuesday was anything new. She had a record. She'd gone after former Obama official Susan Rice, a former National Security Advisor, Susan Rice, in a similar manner.
Yeah, with the same vulgar language.
Well, the same vulgar language. And even to take this a step further, the other disappointment I have with ABC is, and I hate to keep, I don't necessarily want to call people out specifically, but in this case, I think I will. Channing Dungey, who's the head of ABC Entertainment, who's been getting a lot of praise for making this decision. She's a woman of color, and she not only, she signed off not just on bringing Roseanne back, knowing with all the stuff that Roseanne had written before, but also signing off on a second season. Let's not forget, that show was about to be the centerpiece of ABC's fall lineup, and it wasn't until Roseanne tweeted this egregious statement that all of a sudden Ms. Dungey got a wake-up call and said, oh, you can't do that. So, I'm not quite so sanguine about how willing I am to let people sort of off the hook until they're confronted with a financial reason.
Mm-hmm. And I want to concur exactly what Milton has said, because if we think about the space and time we're in right now and how patriotic we seem to be tied to the anthem and the flag, we also can't forget that Roseanne Barr did a horrible rendition of the national anthem in the 90s and then ended it in a very offensive and inappropriate way by grabbing herself in her crotch. But yet somehow we see her as being worthy of being before us today on all of our televisions as someone that we want to look to as a show that is important to us. I mean, those moments in time are already really revealing and telling us what person and who she is, even though some of it is being provocative or her attempt to be provocative. But beyond that, if this is about where we are as a nation right now, then what does it say that someone like that gets revered and put on a particular platform and given voice? And it takes her to make a comment like this to pull her down instead of what she's done in the past shouldn't have even afforded her the opportunity for the reboot in the first place.
Yeah, Mike Fletcher, I mean, entertainment was rocked by the Me Too movement just in this last year. Harvey Weinstein opened the floodgates for all sorts of people being essentially banned from their platforms. Louis C.K., Kevin Spacey, I mean, the list goes on. Matt Lauer, I mean, it goes on forever. So I wonder if this week's developments, need to be taken very much in the context of Me Too, in the context of those other financial decisions that Fox and Netflix and NBC have made.
I think there's no other way to look at it. I think, ABC probably is looking at Roseanne and sort of hoping that, and hoping against hope that she'd change, right? Because I think there is some merit to some of the accolades surrounding the show, the idea that you don't see kind of quote-unquote working-class America portrayed often in TV sitcoms, which tend to be aspirational, where, you know, no one has mice, no one has ants on the counter, you know, everyone has a modern kitchen and a new car and a good job. So there's something to be said for kind of the quote-unquote, you know, the reality that the Roseanne brought, that show Roseanne brought. But it, you know, and like Kimberly says, it's indefensible to me that sort of her track record is indefensible. And I think ABC was hoping that she wouldn't remind people of that. And lo and behold, she did.
We see how that worked out.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. And like you said, I mean, money talks. So the idea was, hey, you know, in this, the new social media age, there's a lot to be critical of, but there's a lot to be lauded for, too. And part of that is that just sort of grassroots outrage can topple powerful people.
Yeah, and Milton Kent, Roseanne, after being, you know, somewhat contrite in the first couple of tweets, after this all came to light, is considerably less contrite, you know, some 48 hours later. She likened the reaction of her co-stars, all of whom had, you know, condemned her, to the way that President Trump is treated, and she said that in a tweet that she feels bad for the president because he goes through this every single day, being thrown under the bus by all sorts of people. Was it the so-called Trump voter, that you know, disenfranchised or alienated white middle America viewer, which made Roseanne's return to television one of the largest audiences of any television audience in recent memory, was this a show designed for those people, as it were?
I think, you know, and I'm going to confess here, I've never watched an episode of Roseanne. I never found her funny in the old days, so I thought it'd be hypocritical to sort of jump on now. But my suspicion is that that's what ABC had in mind. They were looking for a show that would appeal to the, to the Trump voter, because of the, you know, the narrative has been pushed out that Hollywood's liberal, the TV shows are liberal, so we need something that would play to that base. And it's an interesting thing. I mean, ABC for 9 years had a show in that vein. It sort of appealed to working class voters, called The Middle. A really funny sort of low-key show that sort of played on to what Mike Fletcher was talking about, the idea of having mice in your place and roaches in your place, folks who can't make, you know, who struggle to make a paycheck work. That show just went off the air last week after 9 years. And oddly enough, the female star of that show, Patricia Heaton, is an outspoken conservative. The difference between Patricia Heaton and Roseanne Barr is that Patricia Heaton, knew in a certain sense how to keep her mouth closed. And, you know, I mean, one of the most reprehensible parts, I think, of all of this with Roseanne Barr is that, you know, she's jumping on the folks who are cast members. She cost those folks jobs. You know, John Goodman, co-star, will get a job. There are plenty of folks who are on that cast who will get work. But for the crew, for a lot of those backstage folks, they may not be able to find jobs. And that's sort of, to me, sort of the really disappointing part of this, is that she hasn't even really taken responsibility for that on top of anything else.
Sure, yeah, and it's always, as always, the people on the lowest part of the totem pole are the ones who suffer the
most. But it also aligns her with Trump quite well, as she's saying that Trump is always thrown under the bus, that she feels like she's being thrown under the bus just like he is. So it aligns with exactly how she feels like he is.
Is there a parallel, Mike Fletcher, between the reaction that Starbucks had and the reaction that Disney and ABC had? I mean, Mr. Iger, the head of Disney, which owns ABC, according to Valerie Jarrett, called Valerie Jarrett, this is Robert Iger, to tell her that Roseanne was being canceled and to apologize. And he said that there was only one thing to do here, and that was the right thing. So they're not talking about this in terms of money. I guess they could probably make the case that they're going to lose a bunch of money because this was a very lucrative show. I mean, if the audiences are big, the advertising dollars are commensurately big. In terms of that corporate reaction to this event, how would you compare it to the Starbucks corporate reaction?
I think it all loops back to your point in opening this segment, the idea of you know, money sort of driving decision-making to some degree. Starbucks, in many ways, it was kind of a model corporation, right? And the idea of it promoted inclusion. You remember that it was widely mocked, but it was a year or two ago. They were writing things on the coffee cups and sort of inviting a conversation on race. And Starbucks saw itself as kind of in this vanguard. Many people now would argue that where political leadership has stepped away from kind of being the kind of, I don't know, moral sort of like North Star in this country, like corporate leadership is stepping up, maybe not for pure reasons, but nonetheless stepping up. And I think Starbucks saw itself in that way. So they had to be horrified when they had an incident in Philadelphia, and they had to be seen as, you know, basically seen as overreacting, right? I mean, they had to get in front of what would certainly be a big backlash. And I think ABC was doing the same thing. Roseanne was very profitable, but it doesn't take an active imagination to imagine, you know, some kind, you know, advertisers pulling away quickly, you know, even talk of boycotts, you know, causing people to pull away from Roseanne. So I think both corporate leadership saw themselves kind of getting ahead of a very serious problem.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, ABC did have Wanda Sykes working on the Roseanne Barr show as a consultant and as a producer. I mean, one of the stars, Sarah Gilbert, is certainly no right of center person. And the cast of Roseanne talks about how they celebrate inclusivity on the show. I've also never seen Roseanne, so I don't know what I'm talking about. Have either of you?
No, I haven't seen. I've just read about it.
The original, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't speak to whether or not that's actually happened, and maybe it did it happen in the original? I mean, this notion of inclusivity and making
in
all
some
views,
ways, you know, in some ways, certainly in terms of class issues, I think it was one of those early shows to expose what we are dealing with or not dealing with in conversations on class in America.
Yeah, but, you know, I think of the example of Shonda Rhimes, you know, the incredibly gifted African-American producer who, you know, owns a few nights of ABC television with, you know, these all these shows that she's done. You know, would they walk away from her? Would they walk away from Black-ish? Would they walk away from these other shows if there were controversies? I mean, or would Shonda Rhimes walk away from ABC because of their decisions? Or would the cast of Black-ish, which is an hysterical show, I have seen that a few times. You know, it's all in this wild stew that we got. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the NFL, which it seems to me has gone in a totally different direction. We'll talk about that after a break. Michael Fletcher is a senior writer at The Undefeated. It's an online platform of ESPN that is owned, by the way, by the Walt Disney Company. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is at the University of Baltimore, University of Maryland, Baltimore County. And Milton Kent teaches in the School of Journalism at Morgan State University, and he hosts Sports at Large here on WYPR. We're going to take a quick break so I can learn how to talk when we come back. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet @MiddayWYPR, and you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. And by the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, our series of Conversations with the Candidates continues with Thiru Vignaraja. He's one of two candidates challenging incumbent Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby in the Democratic primary next month. That's coming up tomorrow. We'll meet with Mr. Vignaraja right here on Midday. If you've just joined us today, we're talking about race and American corporate culture. ABC, Starbucks, and the NFL have all been in the news this week for matters having nothing to do with television, coffee, or football. My guests are Dr. Kimberly Moffitt of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, Milton Kent of the Morgan State University School of Global Journalism. He's also the host of Sports at Large right here on WYPR, and Michael Fletcher, who's a senior writer at The Undefeated. That's an online platform of ESPN. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. To drop us a tweet, @MiddayWYPR. To follow me on Twitter, @TomHallWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Milton Kent, when we come to the NFL and we think about this in the context of what's happening at ABC and what's happening at Starbucks this week, I wonder, the NFL felt, the owners felt a need, evidently, to take a stand, to have a clear policy about players ability or permission to engage in a protest during the national anthem. This has been going on for 2 years since Colin Kaepernick first did it in San Francisco a couple of years ago. To take a broader look at it, when it comes to corporate entities like the NFL or Starbucks or ABC, what is the corporate responsibility for, you know, racial bias literacy in the country? I mean, this seems that a lot of the teaching about this, these teachable moments that Valerie Jarrett referred to the other night, are falling on corporations or these large entities to do. What's your feeling about that?
Wow. Now, my answer is sort of contingent upon how, you know, sort of the overall view. You know, ABC, if you think about it, ABC and Disney is an entertainment vehicle. Starbucks, obviously, is producing food. The NFL produces football. And I think their view is we don't want to do anything that gets in the way of producing football. And towards that end, the view within the 32 owners of the league seems to be that Colin Kaepernick and what he has, you know, spurred within the African American populace of players is what he's spurred has gotten in the way of us producing football. So he and that whole mindset need to be eliminated. Now, I will say this in the slightest bit of defense for NFL owners. If Colin Kaepernick were perceived as having the talent and ability level of, say, a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers, this would be a whole different argument because the two players that I mentioned are Hall of Fame caliber players. And most of the time in sports, a coach or a team's willingness to overlook peccadilloes, if you will, is directly proportionate to your talent level. And the owners and the general managers have made a decision that Colin Kaepernick's ability doesn't supersede, I mean, his talent isn't so high, his talent level isn't so high, that we can't look past him to get younger, cheaper talent. So I think that's really, that, yes, race is certainly a part of this, but I think the perception that he's not, you know, he's not a star has certainly played into this too. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, I mean, the NFL's not in the business. I mean, their chief and sole concern is how do we get football teams on the field, and how do we get folks into the stands and in front of the TV sets watching these people play football?
Yeah, and Kimberly Moffitt, right here at WYPR, you were engaged by the management here to give racial bias training to all of us who are employees in this building. There's only 45 of us. Mm-hmm. So it's not unusual for companies, large and small, to take on the mantle of having this discussion and having a discussion that's facilitated by a person with a great deal of experience in this very particular thing. When you come to Starbucks with 8,000 locations around the country, you could think of very few companies that have that kind of reach into American culture, or ABC television, or the NFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, millions and millions of people patronize these businesses all the time. Does it up the game? Does it up the expectation for those kinds of companies to really be leaders when it comes to fostering the so-called conversation about race?
So what's interesting is I think as a nation, we do expect corporate America to be the leader on many of these issues. Even though we have these conversations in academic spaces and we talk about creating these opportunities for students as well as the external community to then understand more about the type of work that we're doing and trying to help society become this better and nicer place. But the reality is, the folks in which the money is connected to are the ones that really dictate so much of what we're doing. And so what we see happening with the NFL in a bit different way is the fact that, again, economics plays a part in why the NFL felt like viewership was dropping, why ticket sales were starting to dissipate. And they want to make sure that the protest culture of America does not impose on that space in such a way that we then are turning more and more people away from the game that seems so much American to us.
By the way, we have an email from Stephanie who has the same question that those of us here in the studio have. And Milton, maybe you know the answer to this. And if not, perhaps a listener does, which is, what did Valerie Jarrett do that warranted an attack by Roseanne Barr on her out of the blue on Twitter? So, Milton, do you know the answer to that question?
My guess is that she got up that morning, took in air. apart from that, I've got no rational.
So not okay. Well, listeners, if you happen to know, I mean, and you're really certain, you're not just some, you know, not like some guy at the gym told you, but actually, you're actually really certain about what if Valerie Jarrett was there was some precipitating event. Because Mike Fletcher, this decision of the NFL to, you know, I guess allow players to not come on the field for the national anthem, but if they do, they have to stand. What interests me is that perhaps it's a financial decision, and Kimberly makes an argument that's persuasive, but they seem to be taking a side in this, in that they are saying this isn't about protesting police misconduct around the country. This is about disrespecting the flag and our military. Mm. And the NFL, of all entities, has wrapped itself in the flag for a lot of years. But they're basically buying into the argument that the President of the United States has made and that other people have made. So it's like we don't even agree on what the argument is.
Well, I mean, they changed the whole frame of the protest, right? And, well, they didn't really. President Trump did. And put the NFL under pressure. And now in framing their response to this sort of this imposition from the president, they adopted the president's language. This is somehow about respect for the flag. Anyone who's followed Kaepernick a little bit knows that he sat on the bench first, and then he started kneeling, actually out of respect for the flag. Kneeling is a respectful gesture, and everyone knows he's talking about racial inequality in America. He's talking about police brutality. That wasn't talked about. Ironically, the NFL, just days before announcing the anthem policy, announced that they were going to give upwards of $90 million to a range of social programs, which you can argue, okay, that's not that much money, but it's a lot of money. $90 million, and the NFL is taking this on. They're a football league. They don't have to do this, but they did this. They ended up stepping on their own message. And I think, in a way, they were just trying to have it both ways. We talk about declining viewership of the NFL, declining interest, even though it remains a Goliath. Mm-hmm. We don't know, you know, there's a lot of things driving this decline. You know, people aren't watching television, A, as much as they used to. B, people are worried about the concussion issue. I know I worry about that. I used to love hard hits on a football field. And, you know, when I used to start
as parents all over the country disallowing their children.
Exactly.
From
now I
football.
Cringe when I watch those. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you have that. Then you also have people put off by the protests two ways, right? You have people who are upset that Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid don't have a job. And you have, I know people personally who say, I'm not watching the NFL at all or nearly
Ralph
as much.
Ralph Moore here, a longtime civil rights activist, has been calling for 2 years now for a boycott of the NFL. Don't watch the Ravens. Right. Don't watch anybody. Don't watch the Super Bowl.
Well, that's exactly right. Then you have those people who feel that somehow these protests are disrespecting the flag. So the NFL is, I mean, I kind of respect the tough position they're in, and they're trying to please everyone. And by doing that, I think they please no one. And in a way, probably revive this issue going into next season. You could almost argue that if they had done nothing, this issue would have kind of faded away on its own.
And what I'm most concerned with, and this takes us outside of the NFL, is the notion of protest in this country is as American as apple pie or as the NFL, actually playing American football. And so the notion that we would then say we want to control or contain what protest looks like in this country, because to remove it and say just stay in the locker room until the game begins or after the anthem is played, is really saying, we don't want to see the protest. And so by doing that, you are essentially eroding away something that is so much a core part of who we are as Americans.
And part of it also, I think, has to do with the NFL's image, just kind of like wrapped in the flag thing. I mean, actually, the NBA has as restrictive a policy about the national anthem, but no one thinks about it the right. same way, because the players are seeing more like partners with that league. There isn't the same kind of top-down situation. I mean, and it starts with things like guaranteed contracts, which, you know, which the NBA has, and the NFL, which, you know, breaks people in half, right. you know, right. you know, doesn't have. So I think all of those things kind of play into how this is perceived.
We have an email from Dan who says, stop referring to Roseanne Barr and that controversy as a free speech issue. The First Amendment protects people only from government regulation of free speech, not private responses. ABC's decision has nothing to do with Roseanne's right to free speech. Well, Dan, with all due respect, we're not referring to Roseanne's issue as a free speech issue. We're talking about the NFL in terms of free speech. And it does bring up the notion of whether or not a company, a corporate entity, can restrict the political engagement of employees. For example, as an employee of WIPR and as the host of this show, I don't put bumper stickers for political candidates on my car. Mike, you didn't do this when you were covering politics for the Post. We don't have lawn signs on our lawn. I don't attend political fundraisers. I mean, there are things I cannot do. I vote. And I even know some journalists who decide not to vote because they feel that they don't want to pick sides one ever under any circumstances. So, you know, my employer can say in the criteria for my employment, that's one of the things I have to agree to. And I'm happy to agree to it because I think it's the right decision. Milton Kent, let's talk about the Rooney Rule in the NFL, because in terms of the free speech issue, that's one thing. But in terms of people of color being represented in on the coaching staffs, in the administration of the NFL, they adopted this rule 15 years ago. Tell us what the rule says and whether or not it's made any impact.
Well, basically, Tom, the rule says this. When there is an opening in for head coach, general manager, and I believe they've now extended it down to the coordinators, the offensive and defensive coordinators, who are basically the top assistant coaches, each club is obligated to at least interview a minority candidate. They don't have to hire him or her someday, but they at least have to interview them. And it has had some measure of success. I mean, and I don't have the specific numbers right off the top of my head, but there's a larger pool of African American coaches, very few general managers, and I don't think there are quite as many coordinators as perhaps there should be. But there's a significant number of coaches, in the NFL who are of color. We've had two African-American coaches, Tony Dungy and Mike Tomlin, who coaches the Steelers, who are owned by Art Rooney, the late Art Rooney, for whom the rule is named, who've won Super Bowls. So there has been some success. What we found, though, over the years, since that rule has come into effect, most clubs already have, when they have an opening in these positions, they've got somebody in mind. And I hate to use the T word in this case, but a number of these minority interviews in these particular cases end up being token interviews. In other words, they're brought in just to basically satisfy the rule, and then the clubs just go on and hire whoever they want. It's something that, to his credit, and I don't give Roger Goodell a lot of credit, the commissioner, but to his credit, I think it is something that he has talked about resolving. But at the end of the day, as we found with this policy and with the policy regarding the flag, people talk about Roger Goodell as, you know, this powerful figure as a commissioner of the NFL and all the money he makes, conveniently forgetting this fact. He is an employee of those 32 owners. His job is to basically run interference for them. So he can only do so much with the people that he works for. Look at your own office space. There are very few of us who can tell our bosses what to do. And he's kind of hamstrung in that position also. But, the Rooney Rule has been mostly a blessing, but it has had some curse attached to it as well.
I do have an answer about the question as to what occasioned Roseanne Barr's tweet. This is a subtweet in a thread. There is a tweeter named Michelle Park who said, "Obama's secrets are coming out more and more every week. This is getting very interesting. What a crooked man. He hid it well." That was responded to by somebody who said, "Jarrett helped hide a lot," meaning Valerie Jarrett. And then the next tweet that in that thread is Roseanne Barr talking about how Jarrett's parentage has to do with the apes and the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, it just, you know, we talked Kimberly Moffitt about Starbucks having racial bias training, you know, unconscious bias is something that people try to address and try to understand, try to identify. In this case, as Sophia Nelson in the Daily Beast has said, this is clearly conscious bias. I mean, this is not some subtle thing that's, you know, unearthed in the vapors of Roseanne Barr's mind. I mean, this was blatant. And it was interesting to me, this was called racist right away. I mean, and it seemed to be a different, for example, when President Trump had those really repugnant comments after the Charlottesville incidents, it was not called racist right away. It was called racist eventually. But boy, it took a while. This one didn't take a while. This took 60 minutes, you know.
And so some of that, I think, is very much tied to the connection of referring to Jarrett as an ape, which has a historical connotation, right, in terms of how people of African descent have been represented in media, but also talked about, right, being a form of an ape that's non-developed, that is not intelligent. And so to try and make that connection almost immediately brings up race issues.
Sure. Back to the NFL, Mike Fletcher. And again, we're not conflating, you know, free speech issues and racist issues here. But the fact that the NFL Players Association was not consulted when the players, when the owners decided to institute this rule, what does that mean?
To me, it's mind-boggling, for one. It feels to me if you wanted to have an effective rule, you would consult the Players Association, even if you ultimately did not agree with the Players Association. To me, it makes no sense and kind of plays into this the image the NFL is fighting, this kind of I hate using the word plantation because it, you know, because that's maybe too much. But this idea, this top-down dictatorial thing that the NFL seems to have, the relationship they have with their players and the people who make the league what it is, there's not enough sort of signs of kind of a true partnership there. And I just don't. You know, I don't get it. To me, it made no sense whatsoever.
But we saw that with Bill Roden's book, right, a few years back, $40 Million Slaves. I mean, he was evoking this notion of plantation mentality and that these are the ones that do the work. They're the worker bees. Right. And then it is those that are part of the bourgeoisie who are essentially controlling and dictating what happens on the field.
Yeah, and Milton Kent, the Players Association, did issue a statement that said that the players have shown their patriotism through their social activism, their community service, in support of our military and law enforcement, and yes, through their protests to raise awareness about the issues they care about. Moving forward, does the Players Association, what's your speculation about what kind of stand they're going to be taking, you know, when preseason starts in just a few months? Well, what are we going to see?
Well, I think on two fronts, and I know you're probably pressed for time, so I'll make this quick. On the one hand, I think they're going to encourage the players, the entire player base, and I think the only way that any sort of protest is going to work is if African American and white players sort of come together. If not, a lot of well-meaning black players are going to be left sort of, you know, high and dry by this whole thing. The second thing, though, I think that on the other hand, the NFLPA, I believe, is in on a lawsuit that Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed, who's also a former player with the 49ers who has protested, they've sued the league for collusion.
Yeah, to deny them a place on a roster somewhere. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's stuff leaking out that basically that the owners have sort of, you know, suggesting that the owners have sort of banded together.
And as always, there are even some tapes. There are some tapes of phone calls. Yeah. Well, we are going to have to call it quits there. But Milton Kent, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And Mike Fletcher, Kimberly Moffitt, always good to see you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your coming by. Michael Fletcher is a senior writer with The Undefeated. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is at UMBC. Milton Kent is the host of Sports at Large and on the faculty of the School of Global Journalism and Communications at Morgan State. Coming up, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me with a review of a new show at the Annapolis Shakespeare Company. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday. Stay with us.